Leah Dijak joins the show now. Leah is a lens-based artist from Massachusetts in the Valley at Anderson Ranch and here to talk about a pop-up exhibition at the Harvey Meadows Gallery in Highlands. Welcome, Leah.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
So the press release I read about this particular exhibition, it says, each of the artists use honesty as a material, a tool, and as a point of departure in making art. What does that mean?
I think bringing 14 artists together from all over the place that we've never met, we never knew anything about each other, and there is a real air of sincerity and authenticity in not only in the way that we make things, but also in the way that we connect and engage each other. And so we thought that naming this show, To Be Honest, was a very good place to start because each of us approaches our making, our creative practice with a kind of, without a filter, I suppose. And so there isn't what one could typically think of as like a veil of art jargon that comes before our work or between the artist and their materials or between the artist and the work. It's just kind of raw. And even though I don't usually defer to the word raw, but there isn't a veil between that. So that's how we came to that.
Okay. I was wondering, because when I think of artists, I think of honesty, unlike politicians, for example. making art is all about being honest with yourself and what you see and what you know, isn't it?
I think so. I think, sometimes the art world, whatever that is for whatever individual, can sometimes deviate from that and become trendy or market driven or commercially driven, and so it gets away from the root chakra of honesty, if you will. And I think partially the title also had a kind of resistance or an opposition to what's going on politically, and we wanted to sort of place ourselves in that as a as staying true to what one thinks of as art in its sort of purest form.
Okay, fair enough. 14 artists. That's a lot of artists for one exhibition. How does one find a thread through all of that? Or I guess you didn't curate the show, did you?
I didn't. We nominated as a group one of our comrades, Anthony Renda of New York, to curate the show because he has a way of constructing language and he has a vision for it. And so everybody's currently in the process of putting the finishing touches on the install as we speak, and Anthony's kind of the puppeteer with all of the puppet strings, and so the vision won't be revealed until the opening. The doors open at 6 p.m. today.
Perfect. Well, all of you are involved with the Anderson Ranch, and you were all here for your own disciplines.
Correct.
Attending workshops at Anderson Ranch? Is that the idea here?
Yeah. So the Anderson Ranch every year brings 28 residents in total, 14 in the fall and 14 in the winter. And it's just they don't sort of pair the residents with, oh, who will get along? It's, you know, two residents in photo, four in clay, two in wood, two in sculpture, two in printmaking, and two in painting. And so you apply in a particular discipline, and then they place you in a certain studio. But there's a lot of crossover and a lot of conversation. And like I mentioned, we happen to be a very unique and beloved group. Everybody says that we're kind of a perfect pod of residents because there's no cliques and there's a lot of conversation, and we all sort of work together even when we have conflict or issues. We all like work it out as a family, and so it's pretty extraordinary because I don't think any of us expected that.
What did you expect?
I don't know. When you bring 14 people that have never met together, especially artists who have their dance to the beat of their own drum, they don't always get along in this sort of, the utopia of the ranch. So I think typically you might get, you know, certain pods splitting off in certain ways. But we're sort of the exception to the rule, I would say.
Huh. So you, all 14 of you, have been at the Anderson Ranch all winter?
For 10 weeks.
10 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And the pieces in the show were produced during that period of time?
Yes. So all of the work that is displayed in the show has been produced during this 10-week period. So we all arrived with a certain discipline and or kind of way of working. And then around like week 4 or 5, we all really hit a stride. And so all of the work that is on exhibit has been made just in the last like couple of weeks. And so there's been a real sort of push. And we didn't even know we were having the show until 3 weeks ago. So it's very exciting.
So what was the decision process in putting the show on? I mean, you guys said, let's just do a show, and you didn't do it at Anderson Ranch.
Right. So I was at dinner and I was like, we should have a pop-up show in Aspen and New York. And somebody said, oh yeah, we should. And then I was connecting with Giselle, who is sort of our fearless leader in some ways. And she's a ceramic studio coordinator. And she's been really helpful in putting us in touch with Sam Harvey and Allegheny, who own Harvey Meadows Gallery. And we thought we would just get a vacant space. But then they were so generous and they said, well, you should just do it in our space. And so we're very fortunate that very quickly all of the sort of stars aligned for us to have this pretty fabulous looking exhibition in such a short amount of time.
What makes it fabulous?
Because the work is really unique and the gallery space is incredibly beautiful. And I think the energy and support surrounding the exhibition, making the objects, and also the way that we're all coming together, both like as a group of residents, but with the support of the ranch and Harvey Meadows Gallery and just the community, how can it not be fabulous?
Indeed. I don't expect you to talk about too many of the artists unless you want to. I mean, maybe some of our listeners might want to know some of the pieces that might be seen, but we'll talk a little bit about your art specifically.
Okay.
But anything jump out at you as far as what's going to be shown at the show?
Wow, there's so many things. We have a land artist, Potter, who's become a photographer, so that's a very interesting flip. I semi-identify as a photographer, and I'm doing an installation where I've cut up photographs and pasted them onto the wall, starting at the ceiling, and it runs to the floor. So I'm sort of bridging out in that way. We have a ceramic artist, Tara Daly, who has created Olin collies, these figures and these atomic bombs that at first glance you're not really sure what you're looking at. And then after you sit with it for a moment, you see that she's constructed this sort of toxic material into this beautiful clay form. We have a Stacy Mott, who's created a very like beautiful, fine instrument, which has been an extraordinary process for somebody like me who doesn't know anything about woodworking or instrument construction, to watch a peer of mine, a woman my age, like go through this like meticulous process and make this banjo in this way with such craftsmanship, like totally blew my mind. So those are a couple of the things.
Wow, how about that? Now, is the banjo an actual operating banjo?
Oh, yes.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. With all of the notes and frets and all of the proper places. So she's been really extremely scientific and meticulous about it. And additionally, it's an incredibly beautiful object, even though I don't know how to play the banjo.
Will someone be playing the banjo at the exhibition?
I don't think so. I think if somebody felt inclined, they would be, invited to lift it off of its plinth to experiment, but you'd have to ask her.
Yeah. Well, that's a touchy thing.
It is.
Isn't it, with most artists?
Yes, but this is a function. It's meant to be played. But she made the banjo actually to do it for a study on another project where she's using components of a musical instrument to create a set of chairs that when you separate them, they make a sound. And if you separate them too far, the strings snap. So she needed to actually go through the actual process of making an instrument to understand how to make this other work.
Interesting. Huh. So I heard you say painter. I heard you say printmaker, sculptor, photographer. What else did you mention in the show?
What else did I mention?
Many media, in
many,
other words.
If any, almost all of them that you can think of.
Huh, that's pretty cool.
That's a lot, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool. Are you going to, is this a one-off or are you going to pop up somewhere else too?
For this like particular residency cycle, it's a one-off, but we are in conversation with people at the ranch in development and Nancy, who's the director, about doing a show in New York City, actually in Chelsea. And so right now is in the very beginning baby phases of trying to cultivate that and find a curator and find a space, but just try to sort of broaden the reach of the ranch and all of the extraordinary things that happen there. And so we're fundraising and looking for sponsors and just trying to build all of that. So that show will be different, but some of us might be included in that show.
Tell me a little bit about your residency. Was it crucial in your unfolding as an artist at Anderson Ranch?
It was crucial.
How so?
I have never had the opportunity to simply wake up every morning, not worry about meals, and like roll into the studio and have literally everything at my fingertips at any moment. If I had a question, there was somebody there to answer. If I had an idea and suddenly I wanted to start working with steel or some kind of adhesive, I had to walk, you know, 20 feet and ask somebody, how do I do this thing? And there was somebody available to help me. So getting from my like original idea, like that moment where like the creative spirit like runs through you and you like almost don't catch it, to actually making the thing was almost seamless. You didn't have this, oh, I have to get in the car and drive 20 miles to go to the store to get this very specific glue at Home Depot. Like everything was just available. And so I've never had so much support around that, and also constant feedback where if I wasn't sure about a particular move I would make, I could simply go ask somebody, huh, is this stupid or is this brilliant? And then, you know, there would be a conversation that sort of unfolded. And also the Roaring Fork Valley has been incredibly inspiring just in terms of like the geology and the mountains and like mining culture and the people. I've been out photographing the landscape in addition to being in the studio. And so that's been really incredible.
Wow, that sounds about perfect. I mean, if you can let go of logistics, I'm assuming the muse has a bigger door to walk through your brain.
It does, yeah.
How about that?
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's exciting. How many pieces did you create during this residency?
Oh, my goodness. That is a good question. Well, it's not over yet. It's over on Wednesday, so I have 5 more days. I created my creative practice really changed, and I was able to create this massive sort of wall piece, which I call Moonraker, and it's 20 or so photographs that have been cut up and reconstructed into what looks like if the earth split open and cracked. And so, like, it looks like, I guess, what's the word I'm looking for? I call it a fissure. And so if, like, the ground opens up and cracks. And so I've made that installation, but I also, because I'm at odds with photography, I was like, oh, I should make an installation, but what about these other beautiful photographs? And so I've also made a full body of work. So I've made also 20 straight prints that will be part of an exhibition back home this summer. So I've done a lot of different things, and I've sort of allowed myself to both be a photographer but be like a sculptor and an installation artist without trying to smash all of it together.
That's really exciting. Really exciting. I can tell that you're excited, too.
I am very excited.
Yeah. Well, your website, leahdijak.com, that's D-Y-J-A-K. A lot of pictures of your work, of your photos, and you mentioned fissures just now, and the part of your website called Coastlines, mm-hmm, has a lot of fissures, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
That's an interesting subject for you.
It is. It also, interestingly, started, I was in graduate school in Texas, but then I'm sure you all remember when Colorado had those massive floods in 2013 down through Boulder, and there was all of these photographs of the road giving way to erosion and water sort of enveloping these the double yellow line. And so I wanted to race over here and make those photographs. But then that happened in my own community where the ocean came up and swallowed an entire parking lot. And so this material that you see every day, asphalt and these white parking lot lines, became broken and fragmented, and they looked soft and they bent in these really interesting ways. And so I obsessively photographed before I got here, and then I made a bunch of little prints that I then taped together to sort of reconstruct the compositions. And then I realized that the artist tape was very similar to the parking line, in the sense that it became this very futile kind of material that was attempting to hold other materials in place or direct people to park straight and do all this stuff. So this infrastructure that we're so used to became like completely null and void. And so I got sort of fixated on the sort of Sisyphean nature of how we repair roads to only have them wash out again, and how we have no like power when we're sort of dealing with nature.
Very painterly, those pieces. And if you didn't know what you were looking at, you'd wonder what you were looking at. I get that.
That's good.
Well, that's a duh,
that's
I guess.
That's a good thing.
But yeah, that's kind of interesting. You know, really interesting textures, colors, and not arranged by you at all. Is that right?
No.
That's amazing.
No. I mean, the compositions that are sort of pasted together are arranged by me. But when you see the lines broken and the asphalt arranged, the asphalt looks so malleable in the photographs, but it's actually as hard as it would be if you drove a car onto it. And I once saw a piece of asphalt about the size of a minivan go flying into the air and then land in this like crumpled way. And it was sort of this amazing moment where you always wondered, how does that possibly happen? And then I saw it, so that was interesting.
Well, I know you're based in Provincetown, Massachusetts, right there on the ocean. And as I looked at those pieces, I kept thinking, rising sea levels, this is what everybody's going to start seeing in the
all
next
the time.
20, 30, 40 mm-hmm. years. So it's a harbinger a little bit.
Mm-hmm. It is. I think partially my work had previously been so rooted in Provincetown as a place and my own personal narrative. But now, even though it is still my own backyard in some ways, it becomes a much more universal thing where we're looking at the ocean and also a parking lot. And we all have relationships to that, whether we live on the coast or whether we go shopping at, you know, those mega boxes or whatever. And so I'm very interested in talking about the universality of the shorelines and our boundaries being sort of rearranged and erased and changing, because there's not a lot of conversation about it. And I think it's for like the next generation going to be very commonplace to have entire communities like fall off into the sea. And so I'm interested in how our relationship to barriers, boundaries, and the shorelines is going to change based on this kind of data that we can't map.
So, having immersed yourself in the unknown like that, what's your takeaway? Personally and professionally, artistically and personally.
I'm really interested in the poetics of that and how water is this universal connector, because it is something that we are made of, something that sustains us, and something that we also interact with in terms of weather. And my takeaway is that personally, I've learned to hang on to things lightly, to hang on to the things that I know or assume with a very loose grip. Otherwise, it's like this constant disappointment where I like return to the site of, you know, a certain photograph and it's changed in, you know, 3 hours or something. And so I've had to sort of have this very kind of Buddhist philosophy about the movement of time and the expectation of place and how I'm going to like go home in 2 weeks and what it will look like, because I have no idea. I also think, although I don't believe my work is overtly political, that I hope that there's a kind of light bulb that can go off, because it's such a surreal looking spectacle to see a parking lot and the ocean side by side in that way. And that I hope that when people go to watch the sunset this summer, they actually like stop and think about what they're actually standing on, because it's not going to get cleaned up anytime soon. So, and the cards are made at I've made like hundreds of prints and all of the sort of seconds I'm planning on sending to Washington. To all of the climate deniers.
There we go. That's great. Well, you mentioned Buddhism, and I was just thinking of that sense of impermanence that you get by looking at all that damage, and also the idea of detachment.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I was attached to that parking lot. I'm so sad that it's gone.
Well, people are very, it's a very iconic parking lot, actually.
And there's no such thing.
As an iconic parking lot?
Yeah.
Oh, it's part of the Cape Cod National Seashore. The New York Times wrote about it being collapsed.
How about that?
Yeah, it's a parking lot that people, interesting, I keep making work about parking lots, but that people have spent their whole lives going to this one. It's called Herring Cove Beach, and so you could call it a beach or a parking lot. They're one and the same in some ways. But I think people are very attached, and I have talked to people that have gone, that are just doing their summer, you know, their annual summer vacation, and they've said, I've grown up coming here, and now it's gone, or it's going.
Wow, I get that. But then, you know, if this is what we're going to look at over the next generation or two, I think we're going to have to learn a little detachment, or else we're just going to be permanently pouting.
Right. Right. It's the new normal, the sort of the king tides and the sort of collapsing of these beaches, these beaches that people have gone to for years.
Interesting. Well, I get the sense we could talk for hours and hours. I wish we had hours and hours. So I'm going to have to let you go, Leah Dijak. But I appreciate you coming in and talking with us.
I appreciate you so much for having me. Thank you so much.